Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Now, for any of you or those of us that like to watch a lot of sci-fi, then there are a lot of ways that futuristic movies make us feel about what the future is going to look like. And we are not the only one. I came across a few days ago, I came across a video on YouTube of a very old one. I think from the early to mid 1960s. And a video features, just teenagers at the time, high school age type teenagers. And they were being asked what they pictured the 2000s to look like. What are people gonna, what are people gonna do for fun? And what type of cars are we gonna have? And what type of technology will be available? And how exciting life, at least tech wise is gonna be. And one of those things most of them basically kept repeating about, especially in terms of transport, was flying cars. Yeah, we don't have those ones yet. Now, the question they were asked was just the year 2000. Now, we're in 2026 right now. We are, we are more closer to 2050 than we are to 2000. That's how much time flies. And if there's one of those teenagers, so maybe two, maybe a few of those teenagers who were teenagers in the 60s and they are still alive today, you can imagine there's certain things that they are excited about and, that they pictured a life would be like. And there are those things that they just never saw coming. And sci-fi movie reference. Every time we watch movies, if you've seen the TV show, The Black Mirror or Continuum, and don't ask if you don't know this, it's a very nerdy thing to do. But, the thing is, every time, especially for those of us sci-fi lovers, every time we watch these movies and we see all the, all the gadgets and the modes of transport and the tech used in all these things, Black Mirror is a little scary. But things like Continuum and TV shows like your Star Trek, for example, interstellar exploration or that level of technological advancement. Although that is especially in terms of, called a warp travel, aka travel as close enough to the speed of light as possible. My point is our minds, especially those of us that are a little nerdy, we go wild every time that we picture technology 10, maybe 100 years in the future. So it becomes very exciting to think of what's going to look like. Well, I thought it was just us that basically have that part. Okay, maybe it's just me. But the point is, up until I came across the video of of the teenagers who were being asked on camera what they thought the 2000s were going to look like especially in terms of technological advancement. They said a lot of things that I look around today and go like, my God, would they be disappointed? Or are they disappointed if they're still here? But there's one girl that said something interesting that her point was most from a social standpoint, which is very female-like, because I'm with Jordan Peterson on the point of view that women care more about people than things, and men care more about things than people, which is why professions that has to do with mostly working with things than people, like your construction and engineering and all those things where you're working more with things than people, those industries are dominated by men. But industries where you have, where people work more with people than things, like your psychology, your nursing, your teaching, for example, those fields are dominated by women. It's a very interesting psychological, more like, analysis from an expert, though, may point out, not me, Jordan Peterson. Now, today's discussion is going to be somewhat very sci-fi-like, and actually the main goal of, the main point of basically today's discussion is to dial down, at least for those of us that have been having wild imagination every time that we hear the word smart city. 7 minutes into the hour of four, now I can tell you that this is Helmut and Dwight, and this is Home Run. As usual, keeping you company until the hour of six, and that's from the hour of four. Today's discussion is going to be based on smart cities, and especially in reference to Windhoek. Relax, relax, we're not there yet. I don't know if we're going to get there, but the point is, a few days ago, City of Windhoek had an event. A few days ago, that's yesterday. They had an event where they launched a very, what I like to call a strategic plan, that is going to run from 2026 to 2030. And, the initiative that was, that made center of the discussion was a, people-centered smart city. Now, like everyone who is a little nerdy, every time that I heard the words, the phrase smart cities, the first thing that came in my mind was the futuristic, you know, one of my my favorite futuristic movies and futuristic TV shows started popping up in my head. Well, it turns out the phrase smart cities or smart city goes, transcends the technological advancement that the word smart basically encapsulates. But here's the thing. At this event that was held by City of Windhoek, UN Habitat also was present at this event. And one thing that they kept referencing is that smart cities, the phrase smart city actually describes something more like a urban development that transcends technological advancement in relation to service provision in that environment. So it's not just the, you know what, smart cities, we're going to have flying cars. First of all, good luck with that. Second, it goes, by people-centered smart cities, the main idea is people-centered technological advancement that is centered around service provision, which becomes a very debatable thing. This is all in my head. Yeah, now, people-centered. And the wording of it all, of, people-centered, I found very fascinating because we have, at some point, I think if it's not early this year, then late last year, we talked about, the word people-centered comes up a lot in terms, especially in terms of public discourse, especially in terms of service provision. You have, people-centered urban planning is to be at the center of the smart cities discussion, not, the Star Trek fifth generation type of warp travel type of smart transport. So the key idea is, incorporating technology in urban planning and centering everything around service provision.
Well, Helmut, there's also another explanation that's part of that.
Okay, please, go.
Okay.
There's another one.
Good afternoon, guys. So, on the basis of technically being people-centered, So, I once discovered back in 2023 a document and a whole digital treasure trove of information about the concept of being societally oriented.
Yeah.
If you construct your economy and your other activities, your other economic activities.
So your governance, your businesses.
Everything is based on
health. Everything is centered around what do people want? How can I serve them better?
Okay, not about what people want, but you position things meant for people. Remember the technical, what was that AU thing that we watched where the lady what was the name? Something Phillips. Bekele Phillips. What? No?
Is it Bekele Thomas?
Bekele Thomas, yeah. Where Bekele Thomas said literally, please don't, when you are building a road, but don't make it look as obvious that you're building the road for the mine. If you are building a railway like the Lobito Corridor, don't make it look so obvious that everyone can Google search and ask, what is Zambia known for? What is DRC known for? And what is Angola known for? And then you go look at, why is it known as the Lobito Corridor? Oh, it ends at the port, town or the harbor facility of Lobito, which is a major, importing, it's basically
like the shipping hub.
Basically the same thing that Walvis Bay is.
Yeah.
You know, it's this corridor of import export. And literally, that's literally what the Lobito Corridor is looking like on paper.
It's more centered around extraction, not...
Exactly.
You know, not service provision in reference to the people around it.
Exactly. So, and you and I, we've highlighted many times, Helmut, how fickle African dependence, or how fickle the element in terms of how African economies can survive something like the Strait of Hormuz. Suddenly now we need to know that African economies need, what's the thing's name? The other product? Fertilizers.
Yeah.
Suddenly we have to find out a war between two Russian-speaking, or basically Slavic-speaking countries, Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah.
It means Africa can't get grain. From two countries that can record the coldest winters in human history.
Yeah, somehow feeding you.
Is basically feeding Africans.
Yeah.
Now, where is the fallacy? Where's the fact in Africa will be the economic frontier in the future with the youngest population, with the most educated population, with what, with who, with where? All I'm hearing is Africans working for other people. I'm not hearing about specifically. Oh, okay. Africans, you try and think about your urban centers. You think about it. You lead the change.
I think much of the biggest problem is that a bunch of people that are top level making all these plans have properties in Switzerland. So, but anyway, we have a break.
Get the best for dad this Father's Day at ShopRite. Save big on a wide range of gifts and treats he'll be sure to love, like an 8-piece Wall Home Pro Basic haircutting kit for $179.99 per set. Kalahari Hemsbok Droivors for just $36.99 per 100 grams. Or give the gift of choice with a ShopRite gift card. Deals valid until 21 June 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. We are 17 minutes into the hour 4. So we're just getting started on Home Run, and today's discussion is centered around smart cities. And like I pointed out earlier, the phrase smart cities in its reference transcends sci-fi version of what a smart urban, or more like a techie urban settings that we see in sci-fi. The idea is mostly around governance and service provision and basically planning for a long-term urban expansion in terms of transport, health, and everything. But that now raises up a lot of questions. But on your Africa and infrastructure setup that is centered around, at least the Bigelitomax reference of making it too obvious that it's not in place to serve the people.
Yeah, because
it's in place to serve a multinational company halfway across the planet.
Yeah, because and that's one of the biggest concerns now that I've also realized in the world of now entering into the world of communication specifically. Although I've been in communication for my whole professional career, but now you are in the communication production side of things. When you look at the conversation, I still remember Wanda's words when Wanda was here with us at Eagle FM, literally in that 2021. Wanda and I, we had a slight debate where he told me, Dwight, don't think that an audience is dumb when it comes to giving them information.
Yeah.
Don't assume an audience doesn't know or they can't fill in the gaps themselves. And that particular, just that little piece of honesty.
You got that from Wanda?
Well, not just that. I also got it from, in my household between my siblings. Mm-hmm. If everybody reads a book, you better know your stuff. Everybody reads, you can't make up nonsense for the sake of just making up nonsense just to be the fool of the party. No, you will be made to, you'll be literally made to feel the fool of the fool of the literal category of being a fool.
I think that's a standard. That's one of those things that you basically should expect when addressing it. Any audience, assume there's someone smarter than you in the crowd. There's someone that knows most likely the subject that you are, subject that you are presenting better than you in the crowd. And that's what I basically experienced, and not just experienced, but also I was told that basically 1,000 times by both John and Chicken.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, that your listeners are smart, and the only person that confused me a lot on that subject, especially at least in a more sarcastic way than a serious way, was Chicken, because Chicken likes to make fun of my jokes that I make white people jokes.
Mm.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Chicken, but sometimes your jokes also,
I know, right?
Sometimes these jokes need holy water.
I know.
An exorcism also going for. But yeah. Sorry, Chicken. It's me who said it, not Helmut.
The thing is, that statement I find both intriguing and also funny because I have a large audience. Coming out of, I've run into a lot of people that are black.
Yeah.
One day I was picked here and I was going to Maruwa Mall.
Yeah.
My younger driver is a huge fan. Bro was laughing so hard, he wasn't even able to drive. I'm like, eish, nah.
Yeah, it's like the fans that I find between, SOEs, our new fans are also in ministries. At the Ocean Day celebrations last week,
uh-huh.
just this very quiet guy walks up with a very, hesitant, shy smile, and he says, "You are Dwight, ne?" I said, "You immediately get more suspicious." Yeah, who's asking? "No, I'm a fan of yours. I work here at the Ministry of Agriculture." I'm like, "The ministry, we love flailing us."
Look, man. That for me is an awesome sign that Homerun is reaching far and wide, and thank you for tuning in. But now,
look, guys, we appreciate. Thank you for listening.
Look, I was shopping for Kapana one day.
Mm.
Get out of single quarter, and this wonderful, lady with the one really, really, really tall guy.
Yeah,
like, you're a helmet, right? I'm like, okay. If I was taller than him, I would hit on you, but have a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, basically generally on audience, that's the assumption that I like to work from that whatever it is that I'm talking about, whether it's on stage or here, there's someone that knows that subject better than me, who is listening when I'm doing that on air, or who is, who is in the crowd when I'm doing that on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is, I mean, it's much easier on stage because it's a, you get a response on stage, but on air you can, it's kind of tricky because you are not looking at the audience and they, just looking at their reaction and stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. Now, getting back to the subject of, urban
planning. Yeah.
Now, in reference to smart cities.
Now, it's exactly the point I was making with the reference specifically of when you look at the planning side of things.
Yeah.
Society wants to know what's in it for them and what is this thing that you're going to spend money on? What's it going to do? What's it going to change? What's new that it's going to do that what we see today is not already possibly doing? And I was impressed specifically because Helmut, you listened, was obviously the four or five speakers from the mayor to the, from the CEO to the mayor. And I liked the mayor's speech more than the CEO of Windhoek's speech, because the mayor had a lot more information points in it. Mm-hmm. And so too also the lady from UN Habitat, the Ethiopian lady, Yemeru is her surname. Now, when you look at the smartest city discussion, and you bring, now it literally forms part of a school of thought that already exists about your economy shouldn't be industry focused. Remember last year I kept saying something like your economy shouldn't be industry focused. That's where Namibia's economy is. Namibia's whole economic performance, Hamoud, is because of the mining sector's performance. But the mining sector employs the least amount of Namibians.
Yeah.
Now, if you want an imbalanced picture, then you start from such a scenario, it enjoys the largest amount of investment, the largest amount of foreign direct investment, the largest amount of attention, services. I mean, the mining companies are so powerful in Namibia, they can literally negotiate, what's the thing's name? They can literally negotiate directly with NamPower.
Yeah.
For electricity.
The energy supply.
Yeah. They don't have to, in some cases, work through ECB. They can literally negotiate directly with NamPower. ECB just has, in what the presentations that ECB has continuously had with us, the media, is that they just say, listen, they know there are these three levels of customers that exist.
Yeah.
It's local authorities, it's REDs, and it's mining companies. And when you sit, there's technically a fourth one, but I keep forgetting them. But if you sit there thinking about it now, in terms of these mining companies that can literally walk up to NamPower and say, listen, I want to negotiate my price per unit per kilowatt hour, then you need to know this sector alone has so much clout. Even though the local authority, the public sector, public service sector, public service dispensation sector has got a lot more people with a lot more needs versus legal entities that are probably, you can count them on your hands, they're probably like 30 or 50 in this country. You have to ask the question about, so in many cases, a scenario of a sector, a country's whole economic performance based upon this sector functioning. Hence the reason why you will always see when you go to these events, I'm like, I went to the smart city launch thing. And obviously, just so that you know, dear listeners, I couldn't get my hands on the strategy document because one of the counselors there, Mr. Rupingena, explained literally that this document can't be made public to the public yet for the public to scrutinize, which also includes us, the media, because it first has to be submitted to council and the councilors them have to engage and they have to basically say yes, no, let's change here, let's change that. We like this part, we don't like this part. After the document literally had been written and, they had this whole hoo-ha shebang thing yesterday.
Isn't that something they should have done before the hoo-ha shebang?
First Angie.
Yeah.
So, and it's got a nice little blue cover. I thought it was a UN document. It's technically not.
And the whole idea is coming out of the UN, so it makes sense.
Yeah, it's a UN idea. The smart city, people-centered smart city.
People-centered smart city, yeah.
So, what you need to look at is literally the UN then selecting the opposite of the mission and the mission in terms of longevity, sustainability, and resilience on planet Earth is saying, listen, cities have been focal and have been central to us humanity's identity as humans.
Yeah.
Whether we think about it or not, remember when we had the discussion about the older cities after the world, that other UN habitat thing that we spoke about in May last month, the world city or urbanization thing.
Oh, yeah. Urbanization discussion.
Yeah. Where we highlighted the two oldest, cities that existed in human history, the two archaeological sites in Turkey.
Yeah.
After we had that discussion, we realized, and anyone would realize, that we sit with one specific thing that humans have invented. The ability to come together, to pool resources, to pool various other kinds of resources on top of that. And out of this, we learned how to live in a collection, on a small piece of land with high population density, and we developed systems around us.
Yeah.
But these systems all work for us. Now, what we've ultimately seen, for example, like in the Namibian context, forget about the mining sector for now.
Yeah.
Let me choose one specific feature in city of Windhoek that is not people-centered. Even though there are people in it, working in it and earning money in it, it's not people-centered. It's the public transport system in the city. It's not focused to us, the inhabitants. It's not focused to you, Helmut. It's not focused to anyone. It's not even focused on school children. It's not even focused on the elderly. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because the first thing is that there's a private ownership element within it. There's a private ownership element within it.
Yeah.
So we already face the first hurdle. What is becoming people focused? Well, relief. So take away a burden. Just take away a burden. Look, you can have private companies, you know, in terms of when you look at public procurement, you can have private companies running public transport, no? But before that,
private companies, public transport on the other side of the bridge.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg real good chicken, frozen mixed portions, only $99.99. And 2 kg marathon light brown sugar for a low $37.99. Deals valid until 21 June 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Welcome back. And now, public transport, public transport, private sector.
Yeah. So you can have private sector tendering to provide public transport if the local authority wants to, basically in some way or another play fancy accounting in terms of not being able to manage the fleet themselves, pay for the salaries, and so on and so forth. But however, whichever way you look at it, on the one side, the local authority makes money through conducting their own fleet and providing the service themselves. Remember, if you buy bus tickets to public transport in any other country in the world, it's technically you are paying a fare. You are paying money to be transported. But when you look when you look at taxis have never been the adequate response for public transport. Taxis were more like, because the bus is public, meaning there's 50 people on the thing, each with not knowing each other, and a taxi is meant for one person. So now in Windhoek, the taxis are literally acting like the buses. There's 50 people in the taxi versus being on a bus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, which one sounds unsafe? Which one is the easiest one that commits traffic fines? You've never heard of a city of Windhoek bus driver committing a traffic fine with his bus. There's a designated pickup and drop-off point. Mm-hmm. There's a designated stop and a loading on point. Mm-hmm. And everything is built for them. So why is the city of Windhoek not basically strengthening this particular feature? But that is but one feature. And we've obviously, you and I, we've dissected the urban mobility conference that the same city of Windhoek hosted last year. They should have had it a lot longer, not just for one day. I think they underestimated the scale of the conversation. mm-hmm. and the scale of the particular, what do they call that thing? Of the particular importance that public transport plays in economic activity. You then jump over into the next thing, because the mayor, Mayor Unona, mentioned a few things as well. The potential establishment of a commuter railway line between Karatura, Windhoek, and Rehoboth. But I have to put in a roadblock there somewhere. Karatura is part of Windhoek. Mm-hmm. I don't know who is telling who in Namibia that Karatura is separate from Windhoek. I've never heard of Karatura being separate from Windhoek. I've never understood Karatura to be separate. Yes, it has the largest contingent of population density.
Yeah.
And I even tried looking up, Helmut, in terms of surface area. Windhoek is not even in the top 20 largest cities on the continent in terms of surface area. Just land size.
Just land mass, yeah.
Just land size. Windhoek is not.
First of all, all you just have to do is compare Windhoek is the capital city of Namibia. That means we have about what, 500,000 people.
Yeah,
yeah. Now you have towns that has bigger populations than that.
Yeah,
you have cities that have a larger population than our entire country.
Yeah, I mean.
And actually two times that for, if you look at Accra, Ghana is about what, 3 or 4, if not 5 million?
There's a city, Hamut, not in Nigeria. Where's this city?
Joburg is my favorite reference because last time I checked, there were 5 point something million. That means the entire population in Namibia is almost two times the population of the people that you find in Joburg.
Exactly.
So that means if you have a 3 million people living in a country with a land mass of Namibia, which is a huge by land mass compared to a lot of African countries, and we are basically scattered across the country. I think that's one of the biggest problem that ministries like take for example, ministries of Works and Transport and MICT in terms of this digital connectivity and transport connections, we are super scattered.
Yeah.
We have the land when we are not afraid of using it. You have someone that lives in the south, and then they live in the south. They work in the north. They live in the north. They work in the south. Isn't that what the Minister of Education was complaining about the other time? When you have someone that lives, Helmut is from Divundu, and he has a teaching position at Osinker somewhere. I'm not sure if there's a school somewhere there. And now he has to go.
Did you just say Osinker?
I hope he's not an insult.
I was like, Osinker? I'm like, what? But it's okay, Helmut. Don't worry.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, now it's not surprising to basically look at Namibia and especially one town, one city, like one town or basically one urban area. Let me just say one urban area like Windhoek in Namibia and go like, there really are not a lot of people in this country.
Mm.
But look, urbanization has been, like you pointed out earlier, a significant part of human history. The thing is, every time that we come together at one place, it's just a matter of time before we start trying to figure out the most effective way to mobilize the resources so it can work for us.
Yeah.
Whether it's transport, how to access food, water, energy, and how to basically interact for business purposes.
Yeah.
Or whether it's work related or education related, health related, all these things. Every time that we come together, the bigger the town becomes, the more the question of how do we, at least for municipalities, for example, or for central governments of that particular environment, they have to come together and try to figure out the best way to offer the services to these people so that you don't have this, everyone sort of like figuring out their way to, to have access to education, health, and all that stuff. And that's something that was... So you are already planning this?
No, I'm thinking about this list because... Technically, the largest city in Africa,
yeah.
is Kinshasa at 9.9 square kilometers. So, 9 square kilometers.
Okay.
It sounds small-ish in terms of a straight line, But imagine it
square.
Imagine a square, a box of literally 9 kilometers, 9 kilometers, nine, and then closing up with another nine. Second to that is South Africa, which is not, okay, Cape Town is technically one of the two capitals of South Africa, because it was Cape Town and Pretoria. Even though the South Africans want to say that Pretoria's actual name should be, what's its other name? Tswane. Technically, Pretoria is its name, because if you go and look up what was there, it was one of the pieces of land that were... Well, it's another history. Way, 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 way back. Another part of history of South Africa. So I won't even go there. Luanda, which is a capital also in Southern Africa. Okay, Cape Town is 2.4 square kilometers. Sounds small-ish because it's 1,000 meters this way, followed by another 1,000, and then it sounds a bit weirdish, but 2.4 square kilometers.
That's 2,000 that way and 2,000.
Okay, because here's the funny thing that they use, Ned. They use this reference, and if I think about it mathematically, just look at the reference. Do you see the comma?
Yeah.
So to you, it looks literally like 2,400 square kilometers.
Yeah.
But 2,400 square kilometers from Cape Town, the center of Cape Town, is literally in Windhoek. If you take it in a straight line, the 2,400. So this is technically 2.4, what they're trying to do here. So the apostrophe should technically be a full stop to give a decent decimal point.
Oh.
Because this decimal point that they're using here is a decimal point, looks like a space divider between your hundredth number and what is your thousandth.
Units, your thousandth.
Yeah. So in essence, it will throw any particular reader off. Cape Town has a population density of 4 million. Kinshasa has a population density of 12 million. Luanda has a population density of 8 million. Luanda is but by a few meters smaller than Cape Town. Cape Town has 4 million people. Luanda has 8 million.
12 million?
Yeah, 12 million in Kinshasa. You get to Durban.
That's one city.
Durban is not even a capital of this of South Africa.
Yeah.
Durban has 3 million inhabitants. It has 2.2 square kilometers in terms of its actual land size.
Gee, so at this point, I think it's safe to say that the whole of Namibia can fit in Comas region.
Can fit in any of the neighborhoods, the whole of Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
The whole of Namibia can fit into Comas, basically. Yeah. But you can take the whole of Namibia and put it into the neighborhoods of the cities. The cities, not the regional or the provincial authority or the state authority of the country.
Yeah.
Literally, just in the city.
So at this point, the whole country can move to Sokop and we'll do just fine.
Exactly. You've got Abuja. It's 1.7 square kilometers in actual size, in surface area. Population density is 3 million. Johannesburg, which is not a capital of South Africa, sits with 5 million people. 1.6 square kilometers in size. Mogadishu, another capital, sits with 2 million inhabitants. 1.6 million. And Somalia is smaller than the Karas region. No, it literally is the Karas region. Somalia is literally the Karas region. That's Somalia's size. Casablanca, which is not another capital.
Yeah.
3 million people, 1.5 square kilometers in size. Giza, also not a capital of Africa, sits with 2 million inhabitants, 1.5 million. Okay, not 1.5 million, actually. Sorry, 1.5 square kilometers, just to let you know. Dar es Salaam, the capital of Tanzania, sits with inhabitants of 6 million inhabitants. Sits with also with 1.5 square kilometers in size. Lagos, finally, I'll end it at Lagos. 14 million inhabitants on a surface area of 1.1 square kilometers. 14 million inhabitants.
You know, every time that, look, sometimes every time that I've tried playing around with the map of...
No, I'm lying. Wait. No. I'm sorry, guys. I've been misleading you guys.
Hang on a second.
No, it's actually way bigger.
Huh?
So, literally...
Is that Lagos?
So literally, that comma, Helmut, is actually 9,000.
9,000 inhabitants?
No, 9,000 square kilometers.
Is that for Kinshasa?
Yeah, it's literally... Because now I see when I got here to City 12... Where's City 12? Lagos. No, not Lagos. Okay. When I got to Harare, which is in the top 20, Harare is literally the size of 960 square kilometers. 960 square kilometers. That is massive.
Like, I've tried doing a landmass map comparison of Namibia and a lot of different countries.
Mm.
And one thing that I've come to learn is just it's the same thing that I did not know about the African continent. Because by landmass, if you just look at it on the globe of any map, most if not all the maps basically it's the same, the Makata projection, yeah. The one that we've all seen in geography class.
Which the AU went and made a whole fuss of at the UN.
Yeah, they were like, yeah. Now, the thing is,
instead of writing letters and telling people, just make your projection, just improve your
It would have been an email.
Yeah.
But the thing is, by land mass, Africa is massive.
No, it is. The United States, the one guy showed in terms of that discussion, what's his name? Neil deGrasse Tyson, even.
Yeah.
He said literally the U.S. can fit like almost 4, 5, or 6 times in Africa.
Yeah, you can take the U.S., and it will cover one part of Africa, fit in China, India, and then you can.
Yeah.
You still have.
You can even fit Russia.
We're not going to bring Europe into this because.
Europe is now someone's neighborhood. Europe is literally someone's neighborhood.
For a very long time, I always, I really admired the transport services, especially in places like Luxembourg, where we have, free.
Luxembourg,
yeah.
It's just a four-way street. That's what Luxembourg is, bruh. It's a plot. It's not even a farm. You know that literally, if you could have taken, Okama Tapati.
Join us for the Ehangano Concert Volume 2 with Ali Tobias. Experience an unforgettable evening featuring songs from her latest album, A Bilo, performed live with a full band. Special guest appearances by Tate Boti, DA, Paige, and One Accord. All proceeds from the event will go towards supporting the Our Lady Orphanage. The event takes place on 4 July 2026 at the National Theatre of Namibia. Tickets are available on Web Tickets Namibia for 450 Namibian dollars. Don't miss this powerful night of music, inspiration, and giving back. Ehangano Concert Volume 2. See you there.
Welcome back. We continue. So it's the thing is, every time that when I started comparing the difference in landmass of Namibia and especially a lot of European countries,
yeah,
I totally get why they have this fancy transport service. Transport services, because for one, they have they've had much longer to invest in that infrastructure. That's one. The second one is that their landmass in comparison to a lot of countries with large landmass like ours.
Mm.
Theirs is very tiny, so it's very easy to connect people, whether it's with water, electricity, and all those sort of, or the digital connectivity in terms of the internet.
Yeah,
it's very easy when they're in close proximity. But if you have this, if you have a giant landmass like Namibia, and you have people scattered all over, you need a lot of hardware basically to connect all these people together.
Yeah.
But the discussion now on the discussion around smart cities. I found a very nice article that was written in 2019 by UNESCO, and it basically points to the it draws a picture of why planning. It needs to enhance with the expansion of an urban area, especially if you want to provide better services. And that's what every public official basically wants to do, so they can have something, nice to point to when it's election time. Now,
let me put in another bookmarker there at that point that you made. Here's the thing that we need to remember, Hamoud. The most obvious people we see that make statements about, no, we will improve service, are the politicians. For example, like the local councillors here in Vintu.
Yeah.
If you go talk to the officials of the city of Vintu today, ne? And I'm not defending them, but I'm just highlighting to them. It's also to say so that in the psyche of people, they don't have this idea that the officials actually do nothing. Just because the politician says one thing, the officials are actually working. They actually do their jobs.
Yeah.
Now, here's the downside. They are technical expertise, the officials.
Yeah.
They studied to have these roles. They had to do apprenticeships to get these roles. They had to acquire certifications, industry certifications to get these roles.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, Helmut, what's an industry certification exists for a politician?
Lying, very easy. To a very large number of people.
Because I was good. My next answer would have been, who issues it?
Huh?
Who issues it?
The people with their
definitely
hands.
I definitely know it's not NQA.
Look, it's not the NQA. It's the people that every time someone speaks fancy English to a crowd, you know, they go.
So I should also go and become.
So they just go to Onoma Gekumukuru. And the thing is.
Why did you say that, Armin?
Look, I like how she had a lot of flaws out of the mouth. Have you ever listened to someone read a poem read a poem in Arabic?
No.
Oh, no. When it comes to poems, my go-to language when it comes to poems is Arabic, but that language is something else. Because they write in, at least in my point of view, they write by starting with a full stop and then ending with a capital letter. Because they're starting from right to left, which I can't read
read left to right.
Jeez, I swear. Now, the thing is...
Look, I know. The irony is heavy today, but yeah.
Yeah. Now, okay, just let me read something for you from UNESCO on the subject of smart cities and basically urbanization. So it's urbanization, and then which will require excellent planning. Now, I like to look at old cities. In terms of subway, I'm not sure if it was you or someone else that pointed out, told me to look at the blueprint, almost like the layout, because you can find it available on the internet. Yeah, of Moscow, Russia's subway system. It's structured in a way to basically serve everyone, irrespective of which direction you're headed in.
Yeah.
Now, as you can imagine, that takes years of planning, and they have had the technological advancement and the time to basically pull that off. And compared to those of us that are just coming from 1990 there, that's a whole different discussion. But just on urbanization coming together and the problems that the unintended consequences of large number of people living in close proximity is that you have also high in crime statistics.
Yeah.
That means you also have to...
That's a good thing that you bring up.
Yeah.
That's a very good thing, Amor.
Shout out to UNESCO. No. Water security.
I hope Nampol listens to this. Crime stats.
Yeah.
Because we only get crime reports. We would also like crime stats.
Yeah, crime stats would be nice. But you know what? Yeah.
Amor, there's nothing you can do there in some cases, for example. I'll show you this from someone who loves information to help improve, okay, what you need to know has happened in a specific time frame. Mm-hmm. For example, when it comes to public safety. Public safety is a core concern. We literally, as Namibia, had to react to appoint, what was that lady's name, that other police officer, Fonseca, where she now has that targeted tourism protection, whatever unit, which is even more mind-boggling because... The police are there supposed to ensure that there's public safety.
Not a targeted one.
Not you setting up a specific one just to protect tourists.
So that's you solving symptoms.
It's not even about solving symptoms. Anyone knows in any country that tourists are going to be a weakness in any country across the world. Even in Europe, when you go to Europe. If you're going to tourist, Helmut, if I give you $10,000 today, and I tell you, Helmut, go and experience a holiday in Europe, you're going to be having European, yes, they're going to be looking European, cleaner boys, asset forfeiture department guys, harassing you as well.
Yeah.
Because it happens.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's the same kind of criminal element across the world, wherever you go. Now, why would you just go and set up a specific tourism policing unit instead of saying the policing element for the police has to be have a 360 degree discussion? Yes, you can formulate yourself.
So make the whole environment safe so you don't have
for
to come
everybody
up with a targeted
exactly.
one.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, for the past 2 days, since Sunday up until today, you know, I've seen a whole bunch of like realigned light poles and street signs and stuff, you know. I hope you're getting the joke, Helmut, because it's in your class of making such jokes, you know, using English.
Unfortunately, yes.
You've seen those realigned poles and street signs and stuff, ne? Over the past 2 days. Now, the police highlighted themselves, Nampol, not Sarivantuk, Nampol. The police highlighted themselves that they realized over the past weekend a severe increase in traffic-related incidents, yeah. And obviously that traffic-related incidents are always under the purview of the police. They must process it.
Yeah.
Because obviously there's, in some cases, if the car has insurance on it, the insurance wants a police accident report before they act.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously this also means that the police has to then designate who is actually at fault for said particular event of the traffic incident.
Yeah.
And specifically from that scenario, you get to understand, okay, so we realize that it's potentially a whole bunch of people that shouldn't be driving cars on Friday nights, Saturday nights, and even on Sunday nights.
Yeah.
Because possibly the police is not present.
It's that and also, I'll
finish that sentence. I'll tell you why I say what I just said.
Yeah, my point is, I think we have a little bit of, a little too much fun with alcohol during the weekends.
No, but we were all there, Helmut, you and I know.
Uh-huh.
But have you ever been in a car where your driver is intoxicated and he can barely keep his eyes open?
You are
busy falling asleep on the backseat of the passenger.
Unfortunately for me, no.
Yeah, I've been in such a situation and I've realized what to do, what not to do. Yeah. Firstly, if you know you're going to go and party and you know you're the driver and you've got the car and you've got the license, you're the one under the bigger threat of facing a traffic fine and even imprisonment if anything happens to the other people, even if it was their fault for what they caused. So why I say that, just last week, not this past Sunday, the previous Sunday,
yeah,
I use the street when I come from home. There's this, what's the street's name? Kenneth Kaunda Street, which was the old Ulan Street here in Kleinwendoek, to get to the studio when I come for the Sunday morning show. And as I'm on my way, not the Sunday, the previous Sunday, this black BMW BX5 comes from the front, but it's like suspiciously driving slow. Now, I'm on my usual, because I don't care. If it doesn't impede in my, you know, what you call it, movement.
Right of way,
basically, yeah. Then don't
none
bother.
Of business, yeah.
But as I'm driving past now, I look right to the X5 and the X5's window rolls down and this young guy shouts, "Is that the police standing over there?" This is, mind you, this is literally at like 5 a.m. in the morning on the way to the studio. There's a little like in that time period, and it is super cold because Dwight always does this thing. I wear a shorty.
Yeah.
So it's super cold. So I'm busy there, you know, being a little pop icicle on my scooter.
Yeah.
And this guy's asking me, "Is that the police standing over there?" I said, all I did was just look in front and drove on. Because the thinking is, don't get involved.
Yeah.
If you were drinking and you're driving, that is a you issue. That's the first wisdom any person will tell you. You made a, what's that thing's
conscious
name?
Conscious decision.
A conscious decision to go and party, to go and pick up your buddies, to go pick up a few girls that you guys also know, and you decided to have a party and get intoxicated. It is your problem to sort out how you sober up between walking out of the club and getting to your front door and ensuring in between, no, not even to your front door, making sure that in between you've sobered up to such a level that in the event that the police or the traffic show up, mm-hmm. that you can literally say legally, I wasn't drunk according to the police breathalyzers. But believe you and me, the evidence happened over this past weekend. So my theory is just, it's all these guys with their automatic cars who think they are drivers because somehow they were certified by NATIS and we now see the results. Technically, they don't know how to drive.
Yeah, so look, the thing is, first of all, driving at night is basically means you have to be extra careful. It's not the same as driving during the day because of visuality, you know, visual discussion.
Yeah.
That's one. And because, you know, I mean, a human being can see much better during the day than we are at night. That's not rocket science.
Exactly.
That's one. So that means you have to be extra careful when driving at night. Now, when you driving drunk at night, it's just putting yourself at 2-3 times the danger.
You, the other road users, and if you've got passengers, your passengers as well. Yeah. So, the best wisdom I can share especially young men who, you know, want to feel somehow empowered after getting their license is, dude, if your mom gives you the car keys, I'm using your mom because in many cases I know it won't be the dad's car.
The dad is not dumb. Nah.
He knows what you want to do because he was also there and he wanted to do the same thing to his dad's car.
Because if he was your age, he knows what exactly he would be doing with that car.
Exactly. So it's not your dad's car.
We know each other.
It's your mom's car.
We know ourselves.
We know our gender. It's your mom's car. So, because your mom loves you, don't abuse the love for something else. That's the best advice I can give you. So if you're going to go hang out, you'll have to not drink. But before that, ad break.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg Real Good Chicken frozen mixed portions, only $99.99. And 2 kg Marathon Light Brown Sugar for a low $37.99. Deals valid until 21 June 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
So don't abuse your mom's love.
Yeah. Don't abuse your mom's love, guys. I know this is not about, you know, a men's conference here on Eagle FM. And I didn't want it to be a men's conference either or to sound like one. But the key takeaway that you can look at, Helmut, is coming now entirely back to the city, the smart city component. Yeah. The safety feature should be there for all. Look. It's obviously a reaction that the police had at the start of this year with regarding attacks on tourists and robbings on tourists. Yeah. Understandable. But this also means that technically that thing that the police love bragging about, police intelligence, it just didn't work in that scenario.
Yeah.
So how do you have intelligence specifically about drug busts and watergoederse? Yeah, because the drug dealer sits still. He has a home and a house and he supports the family.
Mm.
But you can't find the asset forfeiture departments that you guys know exist in the communities? I'm just letting it hang there, Helmut. The police know all the regular suspects.
Someone asked a question in relation to the Jeffrey Epstein victims that you're telling me we have cameras that can see interstellar bodies in Andromeda. But we don't have the technology to find kids that go missing every day. That's just the, you know, that doesn't make sense. Well, it did make sense until the Epstein files came out, and then you saw that.
Until we saw the emails that, you know, that were communicating with people.
The names of the individuals are basically the ones with the technology to look for the people, and then it was like, you know what, I've lost hope. People-centered urban expansion in incorporating technology and for better service provision and transport, basically all across the board. UNESCO points out the urbanization discussion and the need for the urbanization discussion and the need, especially as it expands, the need for proper planning. And we now live in a digital age, and the need to basically make life easier for ourselves and incorporate technology in an efficient or effective way in that expansion for better service provision. The article is from April 2019, and they wrote the following. Water security, sanitation, urban violence, inequality, discrimination, pollution, unemployment. In a world where urbanization is beginning, these are some of the critical challenges that cities will have to face, like the attack on tourists that you just referenced. Now, half of the world's population today. Just skip all that nonsense and go straight to cities are expected to shelter two-thirds of the populations of the world by 2050. In other words, by UNESCO's projection, by 2050, two-thirds of the world population will be living in urban areas. And as a developing country, we have seen these trends in real life. I mean, in real time. After independence, one thing that was very apparent is that there are more people that lived in rural areas than those that lived in urban areas. And then with time, basically 30 years down the line, we saw that population statistics swing from a rural direction into the urban direction.
Yeah.
And the projection, obviously, if you can just using the NSA statistics from our recent population statistics, is that you can already see that there is a first of all, if you factor in the influx of from rural to urban migration, and the change in rural to rural and urban population, comparison from 2011 to 2023, then you can see that by the time that we conduct our next population statistics, chances are very high the number of urban residents is going to be higher than the number of rural residents.
And then in between, people will be asking the question, but why are we not getting access to water? Why are we not getting this? Why are we not? In between, people are having babies and people are moving. Which basically, once again, also in a Namibian context, Hamoud, boils down to the same thing, that the other local authorities are not pulling up their own socks in order to contribute to national development agendas.
Now, what I just what I'm looking forward to see in terms of implementation is the Minister of Urban and Rural Development. Financial advice, at least I like to call it, of the newly elected local authority officials in Rundu earlier this year.
Financial advice.
That was excellent financial advice.
The advice was obviously the rejection, remember, for the sports team to South Africa. At the end of that month, they didn't have money to even pay salaries. I was like, how could
someone wanted to go to South Africa so bad?
The minister mentioned this. But anyway, it sounded good.
Yeah.
For us, the media.
Now, then the article from UNESCO here goes on to say that born in the early 2000s, the concept of smart city seeks to provide answers to these challenges, your challenges that are pointed out above in terms of water security and sanitation and urban violence, in terms of security, and you have pollution, unemployment, and all those things. And basically, the foundation of it is service provision of the ever expanding urban societies. Urban areas, and it's also projected to expand even more And expansion is what we have inside so far, because their projection takes the projection, or more like the statistics, all the way to 2050. Now, born in the early 2000s, the concept of smart city seeks to provide answers to these challenges by combining new technologies with humanist ideas. Through innovative urban system, smart cities promote socio-economic development while enhancing the quality of life.
That's the reason why I gave that little definition at the start. If you want the opposite of this statement, look at what already exists. Meaning, look at the mining sector. Who does the mining sector work for? And this is the biggest disconnect that the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy, they always fail this test. They always fail it. I'm sorry.
I think when it comes to the extractive industry, that's one thing we've observed is that's an entire Africa problem.
Them too as well.
Our emphasis on, on the extractive industry, or our dependence on the extractive industry. Look, you and I did the Dutch case.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did the Dutch case. And one thing that was pointed out...
And we are literally on track being cursed by the Dutch curse.
I think as a continent, we are already there. If anything happens to the entire extractive industry, we are cooked.
Yeah.
We are already struggling right now because of the lab-made diamond imaging to be competitors of the natural one. And, now we don't know what to do because we were so dependent on that particular resources. We didn't, at least I like to think about
now that the resource is drying up.
Yeah, now that the resource
okay, it's not drying up.
It's the competition that's much cheaper in comparison.
Yeah,
in terms of extraction.
There's a replacement that was brought into the market, made
more effective.
Half the price, or not even half, less than half the price of making the thing and the time frame, and it seems to be just outperforming the actual sale of a diamond.
And you know what? We don't have the technology
to duplicate it even in Namibia. Okay, technically Namdeb, they were the guys experimenting in the thing.
So they shot themselves in the foot. Nice. Now.
Because I remember back, what's the CEO, Willie Mertens, he mentioned it to President Bumba when we, the media, were invited to this State House engagement with the Namdeb CEO and his entourage, and President Bumba just there in front of us, the media, asked, you know, what's up with diamonds, and then he explained it right there in front of us that
it was part of the R&D for a while.
Yeah, they wanted to see what was the big hype about, what specifically they could do in terms of also seeing what's behind this technology, its investments. And so, and obviously, a company like Namdeb would know who are the countries and companies behind lab-made diamonds.
I would want to know too if I was in that business.
Yeah. So they also know basically who the competition is that's literally, firstly, impacting Russian. It's Russian, Namibian, Botswanan, Angolan, South African diamonds. But it literally impacts Global South countries. You can think of Russia technically as part of Global South, but on the scale of the BRICS level countries, because it's also a founding member. But the aim there is that it seems like the companies making lab-made diamonds, some of them are from India, but India is also a diamond-producing country.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the Chinese, to be honest, to be exact, but there's probably also technology behind it from China.
You bet.
But it's literally from a cluster of the world, some hubs of the economic zones that literally are behind this technology of lab-made. And there's nothing you can do. Everybody has the choice and the chance to do anything. I mean, how do you think Helmut would a construction worker and even a contractor feel if you bring to Namibia innovative building materials and innovative building solutions? Meaning you can build in half the quicker the time, and you can reduce costs.
A fraction of the price.
And you don't need as much employment on the works on the job site.
First of all, construction companies are not going to like you.
They're not going to like. Because, do you know what's the thing?
Yeah.
Before we ever heard of 3D printing, there's a South African company who literally basically brought forward the idea of the interlocking brick situation.
Yeah.
A brick, not a paver, not something you put on the floor,
mm-hmm.
something you build walls with.
Yeah.
For a long time, I was, because the reason why I like R&D and manufacturing, since I've also worked technically in manufacturing, is I'm always impressed with the quality of work at the end of the day. How many inputs it took to make this one single thing.
So efficiency
basically,
and the quality of the
work. And you basically feel like an artist. You basically feel like an artist at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So for example, me with my newspaper background, but then also think about the guys that innovate in construction, being able to find a way, a resource that's right there, Helmut. All you need to do is just repurpose the thing and its particular goal, convince the banks that what you are using to build a building with, a structure with, is mm-hmm. just as good as somebody running around with brick and mortar. And for some reason, I don't know what it is, but I suspect that Namibia's construction industry
uh-huh.
possibly is not in line with Namibia's climate targets.
Okay. Is it possible some of the... And this is just me scratching my head and coming up with stuff.
But I'm suspecting it. I'm literally suspecting it.
No, you're on climate. I'm on the money side of things. You have to understand that, okay, at least my point of view is the only way to, the only, you know, rational explanation that we can think of in terms of our, you know, like reluctance in term, in adopting alternative building materials. Which would help a lot. And I believe we all know this, the financial institutions, public officials, we all know this. The reluctance in its adaptation for me points to the amount of money that's already in the industry.
Mm.
And the financial institutions are also going to be reluctant to participate because they already have the, you know, the brick and mortar.
They already have investments.
Industries.
Yeah.
It's either they have investment, basically they have investment in them, or they have, because they are the establishment part of the construction sector, they have, you know, they have, all this, you know, leverage, and they have all this, what's this, you know,
where cloud. They could
be, not cloud per se. They have, securities that in terms of money, they, a lot of institutions have borrowed money from them and put up a lot of these institutions as security.
Cloud,
it's
because there's leverage in that cloud.
So there is leverage in there already. So now they can't just come and fund you with your alternative building material because they know that if you are a success, the amount of money they have invested in what you are literally coming to replace, they will have trouble recouping it.
Which is a plausible, very good idea. But here's the downside. I don't know if it's... Is it today or is it Monday? But there is an article specifically about the what's the thing's name? The housing backlog situation again.
That's hardly news at this point.
To be honest, the NSA is not empowered enough. And I'm not defending the NSA, but you can see an obvious deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
They're not empowered enough to continuously run the surveys, as well as also the data collection exercises that they need to run on a daily basis. On a daily basis. I say daily. Daily. They should just be a processing center the whole time. Just pushing out data reports, statistic reports about Namibia the whole time to the Namibian public. So the Namibians go like, at one particular stage, they will just go like, brah, we were still trying to process and to digest the information of last week. What's this new revelation in data collection? That's all they're supposed to do. But the deficiency comes in literally where you realize, for example, Namibia's goal, and when we did, what's that regional address last year of Kwango East for Inkurunkuru? Remember when the governor, Sinimbo, mentioned the future plans for the extra towns.
Oh, I was going to go with watermelon juice, but go on.
Jay was fair. Do you remember that the extra towns that you mentioned in terms of to being classified as new urban settlements?
Yeah.
So what does a new urban settlement need, Helmut? A new urban settlement needs planning, roads, sanitation infrastructure, water supply infrastructure, refuse removal infrastructure. Then you need to bring in clinics or hospitals. You need to bring in a police station. You need to bring in, and that's just one settlement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And then you need to bring in an education facility, meaning a school and a primary school and a high school. And then obviously an early childhood development center, which is technically a kindergarten. For a long time, I couldn't understand what an ECD was until,
mm-hmm.
I don't know why it had to take a woman to explain it to me, but technically until it took a woman to say, listen, you are thinking about kindergarten, Dwight, because you went to a kindergarten as a kid. Yes, I went to a kindergarten,
mm-hmm.
but now we're calling them ECDs.
Yeah.
So you will need an ECD, you will need a primary school, you will need a high school. You will need a police station, you will need a hospital or clinic. Something sizable, depending on the population density.
Mm-hmm.
The downside of that, Helmut, is literally, it's investment by the public sector that they've got to make. The investment by the public sector means more Namibians need to be employed in order for, firstly, for them to meet the basic coverage in that country, in that specific part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Then they also need to build a magistrate because a new town is a new jurisdiction. A new jurisdiction has a legal principle to govern and to dispense justice
and
in a specific zone.
Back to security.
We get back to security. So when you look at the smart city comp thing, né, and you look at town planning, you look at basic services and you look at needs. You look at what the public sector has to give, what they have to contribute, and you look at what the community will respond to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll ask you this, Helmut. My mom told us that, and this is one of the things where we've actually seen a technically, which is today another country, literally how a religious institution in Namibia built many communities in Namibia. Built literally many communities, even under apartheid and even under German colonialism.
Yeah.
So what am I talking about? So my mom told us, before she passed away, like here in 2015, about the scenario of her particular education background, you know. So, that's why I'm always in love with history. She explained to me a scenario where Rehoboth technically only had one school, and it was a primary school. Rehoboth's oldest high school, which is the school my mom went to, Dr. Lemmer, was, and I even debated this with another journalist, and I was like, look at this guy, what is he talking? He didn't even stay in this town. And Dr. Lemmer, the guy, Dr. Lemmer, was an...
The man the name is named after.
He was a South African.
I mean, the school is named after.
He was a South African. Who was in charge, I think, of like, what was the thing? Colored affairs, colored education affairs and something like that. That is what, you know, if you were...
That was the thing?
Yes, Hamoud. Everybody got separate education systems. Black Namibians were taught under a different education system.
Yeah.
Colored and Bastar Namibians were taught under a different education system. And then white Namibians had a different education system. Everybody had different governing education systems. Hence the reason why I told you why... Parents and grandparents back then could only become a teacher, a mine worker, a low-level police officer in some cases, a nurse. The highest that anyone in your community could reach was a doctor. And there were very few that could become lawyers also.
I can imagine.
So, and the most common job was always teaching. And in the private sector, the most common job would have been plumbing, carpentry, and construction work. So if you look at the limitations already, and if, minus the guys that already had like farming, that mm-hmm. already had farms,
yeah.
then you look at the limitations you've got basically on economic opportunities in a community.
I think a lot of people still did become doctors, if you count witch doctors.
You're now using a Rundu reference here, ne?
I know, right? No place like home.
Because I don't think it's in Nguru that's influencing that statement. But anyway, so back then she explained that because technically I'm Catholic, so I'm going to obviously sound like I'm promoting the Catholics. So what happened was, when the next school was planned, the Namibia is the only country, if you read up about Namibia's Catholic administration.
Yeah.
Namibia is the only country, I think, in Southern Africa that has two dioceses. From Rehoboth downwards to the border, it reports to Cape Town.
Yeah.
From Windhoek and the whole of the rest of Namibia reports to Windhoek. So technically, Namibia has like two bishops, two archbishops.
So the what is diocese in English?
Okay, think of it like regional, think of it like a governor.
Oh.
So if you hear archbishop, an archbishop is the highest religious authority in the Catholic Church in a designated territory.
Yeah.
But there was a time where the whole south of Namibia was reporting to Cape Town, until Cape Town had to establish through the Vatican through Cape Town had to establish an archdiocese in Namibia. And where they started first was firstly in Kitmans. So the whole of the south of Namibia reports to Kitmans, basically, and Kitmans to Cape Town, and the whole of from Windhoek northwards reports also to Cape Town, but everybody else reports to Windhoek. I was obviously confirmed in Windhoek, but my first Holy Communion was in Rehoboth, so I was under two different dioceses, basically. If you think about it, it's like two different jurisdictions, basically, in the same jurisdiction legally. Yeah. Religiously, two different, legally, same jurisdiction. So when you look at it, that scenario, so back to the school story, my mom told us that the only other school, technically the oldest school there, was a junior secondary school, but they had only from one grade, from a certain grade to another grade. That technically was the oldest school in Rehoboth. JSS was its name. Literally junior secondary school. That's it, JSS. And the other primary school that was built by the Protestant community of Rehoboth. And then it was a specific father that came from Kitmans. It was the guy that became the archbishop for the southern diocese, Giminello, and another Italian father or German father. When they came from Kitmans and they assessed, you know, what needs does the Rehoboth Catholic community basically need? Because there was a clear division based on religion.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to people's testimonies sometimes, Hamlet, then you realize the things that you would have seen, for example, like in Ireland, the sectarian clashes between Catholic and Protestants.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like even in the United States, the US also has a major, what you call it thing, sectarian political issues underlying. And then you realize the same thing was also playing out specifically in Africa, specifically in like places like Rehoboth. And my mom explained, then all those fathers did, they collected monies. They had like a collection, like, you know, fundraising exercises back home in mm-hmm. Germany and Italy. And then they had local fundraising initiatives in Rehoboth, combined the tally of money together, and they literally built, with local construction workers and construction talent, literally built that whole mission ground, which includes the only hospital in the town, St. Mary's Hospital in Rehoboth, which is partially government-run, partially run by the Catholic Church. So technically is foreign aid with foreign development with local government impetus, because I think the staff are paid by the Ministry of Health. So the hospital, the primary school, the church itself, the other workshops, the residence where the fathers, the priests live, and where the nuns also live, the residence of the nuns on the other side, plus the kindergarten, plus the cemetery right across the Catholic Church. I don't know if they still have that, because I tried seeing like 2 weeks or 3 weeks back. That particular scenario, Hamoud, was something that they had to do themselves for the Catholic community in Rehoboth, because the Protestant community was not thinking about having living in a peaceful coexistence to the same particular goals of this urban setting. So fast forwarding obviously to today, you look at how we don't approach the discussion, even of a smart city layout now. We don't approach a discussion based upon thinking about everybody. Now, the mayor, Mayor Unona, highlighted that Windhoek's smart city initiative should include inclusiveness, should have an inclusive element.
Yeah.
Windhoek's, the UN Habitat lady, Yemeru, said a smart city template should have an element of closing the digital divide. The mayor himself also highlighted that this is about it was the mayor. The mayor himself highlighted that Windhoek has to transform. Now, I'm asking you, Helmut, firstly, what's going to work against us? I'm asking you, how do we work past the geographical issues that Windhoek has? So what's the geographical issues? Windhoek is a rocky place to build things in.
Which is a preferred place to build if you are building especially a brick and mortar house.
Helmut, it costs you $1 million just to dig holes.
That's
just to dig the holes for the foundation.
You know, it's a good thing you went that direction. Now, well, let's just address the elephant in the room here. I like the whole idea of smart city, and actually, I'm looking forward to the, you know, to the whole document when it comes out.
Yeah. Because I really want us for today's show now. Yeah. I wanted to dissect the document.
What I was looking forward to, even from the speeches, was they did point a lot of things in terms of using. Is it the city's tech infrastructure? Allowing the private guys to participate in for
network.
Them to generate revenue.
The commercialization of the fiber network.
Yeah, that is the language that is used.
I'm going to ask you. Okay, first finish your statement, then I'm going to ask you that question afterwards.
Something like that, but even more. I wanted to hear more on that. And when I say I wanted to hear more, what I mean is, first of all, Windhoek, as it is the case for the entire Namibia, we have a lot of, we have a lot of basic issues to sort out. Energy is one of those things. Health is one of those things. Education is one of those things. Transport
housing
is one of those things. Now, after laying out the problems, and specifically just for Windhoek, for example, this is how many people we have in terms of, this is how many people we have in total. This is how many people that have houses. This is how many people that don't, that still live in the ever expanding informal settlement.
Yeah.
Now, if we are going to talk about, and this is a 10-year period from 2026 to 2036 that the people centered smart city strategy is set to run. If you just look at the this takes us to the $76 billion over 70 years discussion now. 78 billion dollars over 70 years. How fast are we solving the house issues? How fast are we solving the education issue, the transport issue, the energy issue? How fast are we solving this? And where do we see ourselves using that very simple extrapolation of numbers to 2036 in terms of providing all the necessary services that will basically translate into us achieving the goal of the people-centered
smart city.
Because if you look, this is how much we are doing. This is the progress that we have made in terms of transport provision.
Mm.
This is how the progress we have made. This is where we have a problem that we need to sort out.
Mm.
This is how much money we're gonna need. This is how we are going to source it, and this is how we're going to solve the problem. Unless all these things basically a discussed, if you ask me, on this very fundamental level.
Yeah.
We will be having a conference every 10 years to talk about, almost made fun of someone, but, well, I don't have bodyguards.
I was waiting, man. I was waiting for the punchline.
No, don't worry. It will come after,
off air.
Off air.
Yeah. But you are right, Hamad.
Yeah. So that's what I was waiting for from the speeches. So after the whole speeches basically went through and didn't get much of that, I'm like, you know what? Maybe it's going to be contained in the document.
Mm.
And right now I'm just looking forward to that document because service provision is what every Namibian, not just people in Windhoek, that's what every Namibian is looking forward to. want the easy access to, you know, we want easy access to health services, easy access to transport services, and easy access to all types of services, water, electricity, and just the basics.
Yeah.
And we're still in the middle of the food insecurity discussion. And this is one of those things that makes me feel like we are, you know, we're jumping the broom. We have a lot of basic things that we haven't sorted out yet as a country. I know that this discussion is mostly based on a Windhoek level, but the idea is to expand the idea, because we are UN member states. The idea is to expand the perfect, or more like awesome, ideal basic service provision type of planning on an urban level to other urban areas in the country.
Basically, yes.
So, if we are still we are seeing an ever expanding informal settlement. Everyone in Windhoek or everyone in any urban area in Namibia knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the influx of rural to urban migration, there's an ever expanding informal settlement.
Yep.
And when you compare that the rate of expansion in informal settlement with the number of houses that are rolled out to cater for the people that are coming to these urban areas, it becomes a discussion of maybe we need 100 years because 10 is not going to cut it.
Look, you can build within 10. I mean, if we look at what Stalin did, yes, I know it's the worst example to use in this analysis right now, but hey, man, it's a precedent. It exists for a reason.
The Red Square. The Red Square.
So, I mean, the Soviet Union built cities, Helmut. They went on this massive expenditure drive.
Yeah.
In the 1930s, between 1930 to 1940. The Soviets literally ran out of naming a city. They later on just give them numbers. City 29, city this, city that. It was to that extent.
They went on a construction spree that was just on a whole another level.
Basically, yes. Now, I need to ask you. Yes, Namibian government obviously practices fiscal prudence. So fiscal prudence means?
Stingy Men's Association.
In a sarcastic manner, yes, that one. But it basically also translates in a euphemistic manner to we work on, you know, on prioritizing needs from financial year to financial year to financial year. But here's the downside of literally working with the, I'm going to now use your sarcastic label, the Stingy Men's Association approach, is literally the need that you thought you solved or resolved last year pops up this year again. Now that need needs to be a need now forms part of budgeting again in next year.
Uh-huh.
How much have you ever seen what we humans do? We think we solved something last year. Ne? You think you solved something last year. Let's, for example, say let's say Ministry of Health has got like a contingency budget within its budget to respond to disasters. Ne?
Mm-hmm.
And some of that budgeting also comes, it's technically some of that budget comes from, what's its name? The Disaster
Risk
Management Fund that Office of the Prime Minister manages.
Yeah.
So let's say Ministry of Health's response to, let's once again say it's a cholera outbreak somewhere. Ne? There will be another scenario where Ministry of Health has to go and respond to another cholera outbreak somewhere else in the country. Because in some cases, you see what urbanization causes, rapid urbanization. Is that informal settlements expand, or shanty towns, which is the other formal name for them. Shanty towns expand around the formal structures of, or formal city layout of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And because so many people are settling on these pieces of land, the local authority can't keep up with extending the water pipe.
Yeah.
So just last week, if the city council approved extend fresh water to five streets within an informal settlement, those people would tell other people, come stay, we have got fresh running water here. Suddenly the city of Windhoek is supplying with fresh running water. And then the same, informal settlement expands by another 10 streets. So now those extra 10 streets were not budgeted for. So every time, Helmut, in the developing world, unfortunately, you have to play a catch-up game every time. Every time. And every time, for the few times that I've gone into like the informal settlements, you know, for news coverage and stuff like that, I hear the same issues. If it's not this one, it doesn't have electricity, it's that one who has sanitation issues.
Yeah.
And you ask yourself, okay, so the city of Vinux people must surely know about this. And if you talk to the city of Vinux people, they come and tell you, Mar, Dwight, today we solve a thing here, but it was budgeted for here. Mm-hmm. And then next week we here, we have to respond there, and we don't have a budget to respond there.
I think I know what we need. Matei plan. Let's call it the Helmut plan.
Exactly. You are right.
Yeah.
Matei plan in the other towns of Namibia.
Exactly. Yeah. So that you don't have this influx.
But here's the thing. Nah, city of Vanduk is already doing that.
Yeah.
It's already consulting. But here's the thing. Do those other councillors from those other towns, does it stick in their brains?
I think it does. And the problem is...
Well, I hope Sankwasa is now Sankwasanizing them so much, traumatizing them to such a level that they literally realize they've got a national agenda, a national participatory role to play as a councillor. And not just selling land for bakis. Or is it bakis for land? What was the thing actually?
Well, it's the same thing.
Did they sell land for bakis, or did they use bakis to buy land?
Barter system.
I know it's a bartering system. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with a bartering system, but legally...
That's what they did.
Okay, not legally, but sort of like in a transparent manner. Mm-hmm. That's the whole reason why the Bank of Namibia wants us to use money and not to barter, because they can't trace the activity.
That was... obviously, it's something that was meant to be off the books. I don't know how Sankwasa came across the whole thing. It's because it's kind of difficult to put a Mahindra in your pocket. And that's a...
It's pretty difficult to hide a Mahindra that's not paid for.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
It's not the land. It's difficult to hide something coming from South Africa and someone paid for the Mahindra.
Uh-huh. It
would have been way worse if it was a Toyota Double Cab. Yo. Yes. Yo. How do you hide $1 million bucky? Yo. Yo.
Jeez, man, that's right.
Look, a Mahindra, it's what, 600,000? Okay, it's still above $500,000, but still, you can at least hide the value of $500,000, but not a full million.
It's a whole different discussion that we're going to have. Now, why am I bringing in the whole Matei plan discussion? Because Matei plan is obviously based on the Africa-Italy summit, the proposal that the Italian Prime Minister gave us that at the beginning of last year,
2024,
January, with the Africa-Italy summit. Like, okay, you know what? Italy is dealing with a lot of immigrants, and we don't want immigrants here. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to take a lot of our money from here in Italy and other European countries and then invest in a lot of activities in your country so that your people don't have to come here for opportunities. So, in other words, we just take our money and create that opportunities there.
Mm.
So they can just, find something to do there. Because one of the reasons why they are coming here is because they are here to in search of opportunities. You know what that brings up here in Namibian example?
Mm.
Centralized economic structure.
And that is literally the blame that is entirely, firstly, on the central government.
Yeah.
And secondly, on City of Windhoek. It's their complete fault.
Yeah, like, take for example, I'm a local councillor or a governor of one of the regions, so just a local official in any of the towns or any of the regions or constituencies in the country. I have these initiatives. Maybe I'm just trying, but you guys with not those of you that went what project when the Natural Resources Standing Committee came asking about the progress report on the capital projects. Now, those that are really just putting in the effort to develop their local, their local environments.
Mm.
The thing is, opportunity-wise, Namibia is very centralized. So as a result, everyone, until we figure out a way to basically disperse economic activities, which, if you ask me, will translate into the dispersion of the possible, of the available economic opportunities that are concentrated in the, in commerce region, especially Windhoek, you will just see this influx of people from all around the country here. And as a result, that will translate, that will obviously translate into the expansion of the informal settlement. And that's a heavy burden on City of Windhoek. Now, if I was City of Windhoek, one of the things that I will be singing to the central government is disperse this.
Work on a plan.
Work on a plan.
To stem urbanization, rapid urbanization to Windhoek. But do you think they...
Because your centralization, because the whole centralizing everything is putting a serious burden on City of Windhoek's ability to cater for people that are... Because, you know, like you just pointed out, well, we were called because there was a need for, take for example, for for a tap in this area.
Mm.
We install a tap and we get another call
just
about,
next week.
Exactly.
They need refuse removal.
And we don't have
a
budget for it.
Or they need sewage removal, or they need what, or they need electricity extension, and so on and so forth. And the budgeting basically doesn't make sense. Basically, local authorities are Namibian.
It doesn't make sense.
They have to work on an ad hoc basis. They should not have budget. in all honesty, no, really, guys, this is not a joke. It sounds like a joke. It probably sounds like one of Helmut's jokes, but when you assess reality, which, how much your jokes mostly are based upon reality.
I know, right?
Is literally, local authorities shouldn't do budgeting. All they should do is just stock taking and regular monthly audits of their finances and basically just reporting. That's all they do. They should do. There's no point budgeting the strategy. Yeah, they'll have a strategy. A strategic plan, but there's no point in having a fixed budget and then telling the Namibian in the street, contract cholera, my guy, or yeah, you know, be exposed to hepatitis E or something or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can't respond to it today. There's no budget for you. Go tell that Namibian. It'll be the first criminal act possibly to be prosecuted on just saying, my guy, I have a budget to stick to. I can't work outside this budget.
Yeah.
But you won't hear that from a local council.
You know, that domino effect type of problems that is in between the ministry, that will basically, I believe, forever pledge the ministry of the ministry of environment and ministry of agriculture.
Hamut, is it pledge? Or plague?
Plague, yeah, okay. Not pledge. No one is giving them money. But the thing is... I know, right?
Well, they technically are getting money.
Yeah. Now, look, the thing is, a problem...
Mm.
That a domino effect type of problem, and I'm calling it domino effect because it's one
which
that
you
is
are right. It is
because you have the Ministry of Agriculture trying to provide to expand its mandate in terms of solving the food insecurity discussion in the country,
and
which
young
is,
people
you know,
are running away
brilliant
from
idea.
Rural areas to
yeah.
urban areas
to urban areas
go
and
on
agriculture is going like, okay, what am I supposed to do, farm myself? Now
look, we have to.
Turns out we're gonna have to behave. This is gonna be a tough one. But anyway, look, the statistics are. But now, the statistics are already apparent that the rural to urban migration, especially, the rural to urban migration, also has a say. You know, is higher in a certain age range. It's higher in young people than it is in older people.
Mm.
And that's because young people are the ones, first of all, they're the largest number of people in terms of population size.
Mm.
Yeah. And so they are the ones with energy and foresight in terms of vision or where they want to be in life. So they're always looking for opportunities. And those people, for the most part, are seen in where? Commerce region, Windhoek. And
Erongo region.
And Erongo region. Now you have Valves and Swakop.
Yeah.
So all these areas, every other, you know, all other regions are going like, what about us? What about us? Until they look at just how centralized we are, not just political-wise, but also economic-wise.
Well, I've actually come up with a theory to answer that question, Hamut. Yeah. which has been my running theory, which I haven't said in such very bare bones, honest and nice words and language, is that I think specifically there's some sort of a deficiency primarily in planning and innovation in the other regions. I literally see it, Helmut. Even earlier today, I spoke to my sister, who's now in Rehoboth, and I asked her, literally, have you spoken to people, you know, on the ground, asking them, you know, how they feel, how they are, what they see the prospects in life in terms of the where they find themselves? Outside of Vintu, us, we are like hippies, Helmut, from the 70s. We are happy and positive at life. But if you go anywhere else in the country, you can forget about it. Right. It's either there's a lack of information, meaning they don't, they're not connected to information.
Yeah, that.
Secondly, they don't know why they've got municipalities or town councils. And the municipalities and town councils are not literally connected to the people on the ground. And another scenario is primarily that you get to understand that there's a major disconnect between the rest of the regions and Comas, which is the centralization discussion. Hence the reason why I made the statement of literally saying, I think there's a major deficiency primarily in overall national, regional, and local authority planning.
That right there, the centralized discussion and available opportunities for the, especially for the youth, which is causing the influxes, and that is seeing the ever expanding rural informal settlements for especially the three towns, that's Windhoek, Swakop, and Valdez.
Windhoek is not a town, Helmut.
A smart city. Okay, fine.
It's now, it's not smart yet. It's the city level.
Okay,
but it's not
damn
smart. How did you just jump over? Okay.
Well, it's the opposite mode.
No.
Well, did you see this meme on on TikTok of one guy was asking, what is the opposite of welcome? One guy went, go there. It is the opposite.
Look, he's actually right.
Serious, what's he's the opposite of welcome?
He's actually right. If you've ever done that to a baby brother, go away. They just turn around and walk away.
Siblings are brutal.
Go away.
Yeah. The centralized discussion in terms of and also lack of opportunities. And the lack of opportunities basically means lack of economic activities that people can basically participate in and earn a living from.
Yeah,
that's why I really found the discussion that the urban and rural development minister had in Rundu earlier this year, that I found that one very enlightening, because for a very long time in much of the developmental discussion, the response that you keep getting in terms of why there is a sluggish level of service provision is a lack of infrastructure, and that the response you get is, we don't have money, we don't have money, we don't have money. So money is the discussion. We need money to build all the facilities, schools, and all the energy investment and health sector investment, and all those. That infrastructure needs money, which makes a lot of sense. Now, a central government can provide all of it, which is why I like the Minister of Urban and Rural Development's discussion in Rundu, when he said, you can access funding just for your area, as long as you just go through us and the Ministry of Finance.
Which basically means so that the national government can at least have had an oversight ability to know, waarvoor budget die mense? What do you need a swimming pool for in your backyard? But anyway.
Yeah.
Or why do you need buggies for land? I'm not insinuating anything.
Yeah, we see here that you have bought 5 cars for...
Why this specific car?
What 5... Wives? How many wives do you have?
What does this car do? But anyway.
Just one of them. Those 4, I can explain. Those 4 are my car. Fed cook. I have to practice, man. This is not going to end well.
No, it's not. It's definitely not. But yeah, so
for me, it translates to centralized economic activities means centralized opportunities, means centralized population expansion.
Yeah.
It means centralized heavy burden for that particular municipality in this case.
Yeah.
In our case here in Windhoek, that happens to be city. I'm telling you, you know, after I came to that realization, I started telling myself, if I was city of Windhoek, I'll be yelling at everyone in central government because this ever expansion is making them look like they're terrible at their job.
But I told you most of the most important piece statement that I've ever heard specifically after COVID came from the interim CEO, the acting CEO that City of Windhoek had at the time, George Mayombelo, where he literally said, if only them as the city had first dibs at, because they collect the largest amount of revenue for the government in terms of local authorities.
Yeah.
And if they had also the opportunity to submit a budget that literally can be met by the relinquishing or the, what they call it, that activity in accounting. I almost said sequestration. Sequestration is something else. The disbursement of a budget that meets their budgetary needs for development activities and in infrastructure maintenance, where he literally said if they had such an if there was such a reality that them as City of Windhoek could rely on, because from that piece of statement you could deduce, Helmut, literally that the unfortunate thing was there are some towns that City of Windhoek in this country is subsidizing, meaning they have no revenue, they don't collect possibly $0 for state coffers. This means there are Namibians not paying water and electricity.
Oh, well, thank you very much for bringing a tap into my yard, but why should I pay for it? Because up until you brought this tap, I was fetching water from there and it's free.
And it's a very plausible thing that those communities also have.
Yeah.
I mean, my sister told me that's the same thing that my grandparents had, the same logic they had back in the 70s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, when Onop Dam was built, they were like, yeah, so thank you for the tap, but I can go to the farm and get my water and drive it back to the town. Yeah, people will just have to stay that little bit longer thirsty.
Yeah.
But you know what? You do with what you have.
Yeah.
So there is such logic that exists. And obviously, people are not, like I said, that's the reference to the statement I gave a little bit earlier. People are not dumb when it comes to development issues.
Mm-hmm.
People are not dumb. If you're going to bring them a tap, yes, in some cases, Namibians definitely are a little bit selfish. They want things for free. Let's also be honest, Hamid.
I mean, I've been getting it for free. So
Namibians want things for free.
Well, two things here, man. You have one that you have, you have two options. Take, for example, if I get out of here and I find two cars at the gate, one of them is willing to take me home for free and the other is willing to take me home on a fee. Chances are very high I will hop into the one for free, but my suspicion, you know, my suspicious comedian side will always pop up like,
why are you
why
for
is
free?
It free?
Yeah. What's going to happen? And when they say, yeah, we're off here to, to go harvest your organs and then.
The thing is, you just went straight to the worst case scenario. You wanted to go with sarcasm.
Well, the scenario is, it has happened. There is a story like that in Brazil.
It does.
And
yeah,
I think also in South Africa, maybe.
Like a free ride. I'm not getting it. It's look, the thing is, there's a reason why I keep quiet most of the times around people I don't know, because my fear is the things I will say will either make someone laugh or make someone punch me in the face. There's no in between. So, the thing is when someone, says, let me give you a free ride, unless I know you, what's going on in my head is like, it's my kidneys, right?
So because what must be sacrificed?
If it's even if it's not about kidneys, I don't want someone calling me sweetheart in between now and Komasda. Now, oh, it's live read time.
Well, yeah, we'll quickly take a quick live read, dear listeners, and we come back right after this. Vavitcha University is glad to announce the NQA approval for the expansion of scope Velvetia University is pleased to inform all stakeholders that the Namibia Qualifications Authority, NQA Council, has approved our application for expansion of scope. This approval grants accreditation for the following NQF-registered qualifications offered through full-time blended learning mode at our university. The following are Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, and the Diploma in Legal Studies, Level 6. Velvetia University, where everyone is an achiever.
So,
you're afraid of the sweetheart label.
I'm jamming out of that. Look.
I mean, there's a lot more things than just being called sweetheart, but okay.
Yeah. Look.
We each have our phobias.
I told you one of the, not my favorite joke I said about my friend, right?
Uh-uh.
End up not talking to me for a month.
What did you tell the person?
I keep quiet for a reason. Around people, I don't know.
Something happened?
No.
Oh.
I said something that...
Which is for something happened most?
He said something.
And then you replied?
I replied. My response was over sarcastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was an overinvestment.
It was an over... Actually, one of my best work. Okay. But,
You know, without even knowing the joke, and you're applauding yourself. Even
I know.
I feel sorry for that friend anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. We ended up being very, awesome friends, but, COVID-19 had other plans, so he passed away in 2021, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. But, so back to the discussion of urban planning, right, and smart cities. It's a brilliant idea, and I feel like we have put a lot of thought into trying to figure out the best way to, to plan not just the capital city, but the entire economy. And that's because, I'm saying that because we went to, what did we go to South Korea for?
To go look at a PowerPoint presentation by the South Koreans about, what was it, differentiation of our economy?
We have a commercial brain. That's National Planning Commission, by the way. Get
so much more. Get the best for dad this Father's Day at ShopRite. Save big on a wide range of gifts and treats he'll be sure to love, like an 8-piece Wall Home Pro Basic haircutting kit for $179.99 per set. Kalahari Hemsbok Droivors for just $36.99 for 100 grams. Or give the gift of choice with a ShopRite gift card. Deals valid until 21 June 2026. Only at ShopRite.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana. Onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu kwanda doi nawa nune udo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngejepa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamoili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Welcome back. It's 3 minutes into the hour of six, and obviously that brings us to the end of Home Run.
Yeah.
So the whole smart city discussion, still waiting for the document to come out. And basically now, because what I might be looking for is what are the problems that have to be solved for us to reach the goal in this 10 years period.
2036 is still far, but you are right, Hamoud. A 10-year period is a bit short.
It's far for anything else, but urban planning and implementation of those plans.
But there's already urban planning. Windhoek is already 100 years old. So what's the next level of urban planning going to be? Because remember, they're talking about a commuter rail service running from Karatura through this part of Windhoek.
How long does it
and
take?
And then trying to connect to Rehoboth. Oh, yes, this is the other explanation that I gave Happy yesterday on the radio about this particular plan. So, remember when I mentioned the Lobito Corridor thing?
Yeah.
And it looks just too obvious that the Lobito Corridor is serving the mining sector.
Yeah.
It just looks too obvious.
Yeah.
Because if you look at where the corridor starts, and you look the pathway it's following, it literally follows a known particular trail of extractive
industry facilities from one country to another.
And this is the particular concern. So there is one railway line between Windhoek and the railway infrastructure in Namibia is more than 100 years old as well. The physical railway lines.
Yeah.
The downside of that is also when you go and look at it, what it is, it's one line. It's one line, Helmut. So if you're going to have commuter transport, you need a designated line right next to it. So that means it's like another pathway for different traffic. It's not the same traffic on the same line. But here's the concern. Wherever you go in the world where they've got commuter railway and freight railway, they have double lines. One moving up, one moving down. When you go to Cape Town, you find 5, 6, 7 lines right next to each other in Cape Town, running both freight, both car and cargo, which is basically the same thing, and commuters and passengers. So what are we ultimately talking about here when City of Windhoek has also part of that in its strategic plan that forms part of that smart city discussion to have commuter railway? So why don't they also connect, what's his name, Okahanya? Both Okahanya and Rehoboth feeds Windhoek with employment.
Problem with the distance between Okahanya and Windhoek is our traffic officers will put a speed hump on the rail tracks. But
it's not the traffic officer that built it. You know it's not the traffic officer. Just mention the name. He's already in the public zone.
Don't want to mention any names.
Just mention it, Helmut.
We both know I can't afford that lawyer, Andy.
but it's a fact.
Yeah, and he's also in the documentary. Things are complicated in this country.
I mean, because if you think about it logically, how do you put speed humps on a highway that's meant to make the traffic flow faster, not to slow the traffic?
That's not the only confusing things here. One thing I forgot to point out yesterday in this whole order with me business. The people that are buying this, all this, Brazilian virgin hair.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that virgin part is debatable. I'm not saying the hair is not from Brazil. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on your favorite radio station.
You wanted to end up on that one, but okay, guys, see you again, same time, same place tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your programming with David right after the break.